Hi, this is Bernie Wides on the air for Heritage Radio Network, and the program is today The Naturalist, and we have an interesting show to talk about today. But before we do, let me just remind you, tell you that our sponsor today is Fairway Market, and as you everybody knows who lives in New York City, that terrific, terrific market. So the topic today is, well, let me just talk to Jack a second. I can't hear through the earphones, Jack. You sure we're on? There we go. Now we're on. So the sponsor today is Fairway Market, and this is Bernie Wides, the Naturalist. And today we're going to talk about living fossil. And this creature has been around for about 400 million years, and it's still around today in pretty much its form. It has evolved, but it hasn't changed that much. And I'm going to tell you where you can see this living fossil. This month coming up, the month of June, during the time of the full moon or the new moon, when the tides are the highest, the females of these critters come up out of the water onto the beaches, and the males follow them, and then they reproduce. So if you haven't guessed by now what this creature is, it's the horseshoe crab. And if you want to see any of these critters, if you go down to any of the beaches or edges along the bays, Jamaica Bay, any of the other bays, or even on the beach, on the surf, but your best bet is along the bays, and just walk along the beach, and you'll see who knows how many, but a great place is Jamaica Bay. So if you want to go with a group to see these critters, the New York Audubon Society and the American Littoral Society, that's a group that's interested in edges of beaches, they're running a trip this Sunday at 10 a.m. And if you want to register for the trip, contact Don Reapy. At 718-318-9344. And Don's a very good leader. He was a ranger at Gateway National Park, and he's terrific. So if you want to go with a group, and they'll help you talk about the crabs, you can go along with them. Okay, so I'm going to talk about this critter, and its scientific name is Limulus polyphemus, and it's known as the horseshoe crab or the Atlantic horseshoe crab. And despite its name, it's more closely related to spiders, ticks, and scorpions than crabs, because some of the body structures are different than crabs. And they're most commonly found all along the Atlantic coast of North America and the Gulf of Mexico. And Delaware Bay is a main area also of migration of these crabs, because they spend the winters out in the deep edge along the continental edge, which is offshore and it's down deep. But as the days get longer and the light increases, they get this signal to come up and spawn. So in Delaware Bay, there's a crucial, interesting thing that happens. There's a bird called a red knot, which is a small shorebird that migrates all the way from South America up to the tundra in northern Canada and Alaska. And these birds have to stop off on the way of their migration to replenish their food supply and to build up strength again. So it just so happens that they stop off in Jamaica Bay on their way up north at the same time that the horseshoe crabs are spawning. So they will land probably pretty exhausted from their long flight, probably 2,000-3,000 miles they've been flying. And they wait until the female crab will lay her eggs in the sand or in the mud at the edge of the bays. And the male crab is attached to the female. He grabs on to the back of her shell with two claspers, and he hangs on to her. And as soon as she deposits the eggs, he will fertilize them. And then the female crab and the male will head back down into the water. And the red knots are waiting, and other sea creatures and birds, to eat the eggs. So The population of red knots is dependent upon the population of the horseshoe crabs. So you may say, well, what do I care about horseshoe crabs? Well, the horseshoe crab, first of all, is a very interesting critter. Its name, Limulus polyphemus, it was named after a Greek mythological monster, the Cyclops. So if, I don't know if you remember your mythology, but the Cyclops was a huge giant with one eye right in the middle of his head. So what you say, what does that have to do with horseshoe crab? Well, many years ago, when horseshoe crabs were first written about, people thought they had one eye in the middle of the head, because if you look at the front of the shell, it looks like there's one eye. But it ends up that they were completely wrong. So the name of the crab used to be, it was called Cyclops polyphemus. But they had to change the name because they discovered not only does it have more than one eye, it has nine eyes. So the name now that it is Limulus and Polyphemus. Okay, so the word Limulus means askew. So what does that mean? That means that these crabs can swim upside down. So if they're in the water and they want to swim upside down, they just flip over and they can swim upside down. So that's their first name, which means askew, which means out of water or out of line or upside down. And the last part of the name is Polyphemus, refers to the giant in Greek mythology, as I said. But the former scientific name was Cyclops, as I said, named after that. And also, these crabs have a long, pointy tail. So the tail gives them their name in their order. Okay, you know there are things like species, orders, and all that in the scientific names. We won't go into that too much. But order name. Let me get this right so we'll be scientifically accurate. Yes, the order name is Ipsosura. And that means swordtail in Greek. So, as I said, they're not related to crabs. So even though we call them horseshoe crabs, okay. So if you're walking along a beach and you see something that looks like a helmet with a tail, that's the horseshoe crab. Okay. So people are terrified of them. They don't know what they are. They think they're dangerous. They think the tail can sting, but they are perfectly harmless, because the tail doesn't sting. What is the tail used for? The tail is used for them like a rudder for steering in the water. And also, if they get flipped over in the surf, most of the times they can turn themselves back over by using their tail as a lever, and they flip themselves back over. So if you see one of these critters, remember they're perfectly harmless, and you can pick them up. If you don't want to pick them up by the tail, which is harmless and it's not a great thing to do, just pick them up by the sides of their shell, and turn them over and take a look at them, and you'll see what the body is made of. The body of the horseshoe crab is three parts: the head part, the abdomen part, and the telson, or the tail. And so what do these critters eat? Well, as they move along through the mud, they have sensors on their feet where they can smell, and they can find stuff in the mud like worms and small crabs and little critters that live in the mud. So they, and then how do they eat them? Well, they don't really have a mouth like we do, because they're a different species. But what they do have is they have these legs that they use for walking along. And where the legs all meet together under the shell is an opening. And that opening is their mouth. So what they do with their little claws is they'll pick up these little pieces of food, little snails and worms and other little critters that live in the mud, and they'll put them in this opening between their legs. And they can only eat when they're walking, because as they walk along, their legs rub together and it grinds up their food, and then they can take it in and digest it. So that's one interesting thing about them. Now, since these are invertebrates, and if you remember what an invertebrate is, we are vertebrates because we have internal bones. And if you run your hand down along your spine in the back, you can feel the vertebrates. That's why we're called invertebrates. But these critters, are vertebrates. So their shell is what makes their skeleton, well, what makes their body rigid. And so picture them as a young crab being born. And what do they do when they grow? When we grow, our bones grow with us. But when invertebrates grow, that shell doesn't grow bigger with them. So what we're going to do is talk about that next. But right now, I only have a minute left, so we'll sign off. And as we sign off, I want to remind you that this is Bernie Wides, the Naturalist, and I'll be back in a minute. Hi, this is Bernie Wides back on the air, Heritage Radio Network, The Naturalist, and our sponsor today is Fairway Markets. So I was talking to you about the horseshoe crab. Remember, it's not a crab. Okay, it's a family called arachnids, and it's related to spiders and scorpions and ticks and things like that. So I said that when the horseshoe crab grows, remember, its mother and its father fertilize the egg, and the egg develops into a free-swimming little critter. It swims around for about a week or two, and then it settles down, and it starts to grow its shell. Now, as they grow, as I said, that we are vertebrates, and our bones grow with us. But invertebrates, their shell doesn't grow with them. So they have to split out and get out of that shell and grow a new one. So what do? They settle down on the bottom, where they're fairly safe, and they will pump themselves up with water, which helps to split the shell. And the shell splits like right around the curve of the front of this helmet, and they walk out. And the shell is a complete exoskeleton. If you find a horseshoe crab on the beach, or what looks like just a shell, pick it up and you'll see it's featherweight, because it's just the shell of this crab. And even though we still call it a crab, even though it isn't really a crab. And the shell is beautiful. It's, if you want to take home a souvenir from the beach, pick up the shell and smell it. And if it doesn't have a strong smell, that means that it's a molt of the crab. If you pick it up and it smells fishy or strong or rotting, that means it's a dead horseshoe crab. So that's how you can tell. Just pick it up and smell it, and if it really smells terrible, you know that the crab has just died in that stage and he's rotting away. But if it's very light, then you know that it's a molt. Okay, so this crab, as it grows, molts 17 times, 17 to 19 times. So that means that every few months, the horseshoe crab will have to molt as he grows. Okay, so sometimes if you find the horseshoe crab, especially the big ones, they have on their shells a whole cargo. I call it a miniature zoo, because other critters attach themselves to these shells to get a free ride along the bottom of the bay to find food. So you could find attached to them other little snails. And if you remember, if you're a regular listener to my show, I spoke about the slipper shell, which is a limpet, which has a flat side. They attach to horseshoe crabs. and many other critters, algaes and sponges and all that. So if you get a mature horseshoe crab, which is pretty big, it could be about almost a foot across and back, you will find that they have this whole cargo of critters living on their back. But if it's a young horseshoe crab, remember they molt continuously. So some critters may attach themselves to the crab, but when the crab molts, that's the end of their free ride. But once they become an adult, they don't molt anymore because they're not growing anymore, so there's no need to do it. So you will find them covered with all these critters, and that's why they're called a moving zoo or a living zoo or a living museum. And they can live about, they estimate about 20 years. So they're a very long-lived critter. And as I said, they're a very ancient critter. They figure about 400 million years ago. The only other critter like them that was around at that time was the trilobite. And if you have ever gone fossil hunting, you know trilobites look like little horseshoe crabs, but they never got very big. They're only about an inch, 2 inches across. And you could find them upstate New York in the sedimentary rocks upstate in limestone and other rocks. But it's very rare to find the horseshoe crab fossil. But I'm going to tell you where you can go to see one at my favorite museum, the American Museum of Natural History, where I'm a volunteer. In the Hall of Ocean Life, there's a small exhibit on the horseshoe crab. The Hall of Ocean Life is divided up into the different ecotones of the sea. So there's an exhibit on estuaries, on coral reefs, on mangrove forests, and all that stuff. If you walk in the main entrance to Ocean Life and you walk down the right side, you'll come to the estuary exhibit. And an estuary is a place where saltwater and freshwater meet, and the Hudson River here and lower New York Bay is an estuary. And most freshwater rivers, when they run into the ocean or the bays, they are estuaries. So the exhibit on estuary has a horseshoe crab in it, down in the bottom where it belongs. But that's not very, that's not why I want you to go to the museum to see that. But right past the estuary exhibit, if you keep walking on that level of the hallway, you'll see a big slab of what looks like white cement in a glass case, and go over and take a look at it. And this slab is a slab of limestone, and the limestone comes from a quarry in Germany. Now, limestone is formed by the shells of sea creatures like oysters and clams and other critters like that. So this quarry has some very old limestone in it. And in the limestone, you will see a small horseshoe crab, probably about 3 inches from tail to front of the shell. So what's interesting about this is that this little horseshoe crab was walking along the bottom in the mud. And when I say walking, you can see its footprints. It was walking along the bottom in this mud of this shallow sea, and something happened. Either a storm came up or something to disrupt the mud and kick it up into the air and make it very, very turbid. That means, you couldn't even see through it. And then it settled down over the crab, and it smothered it. So here's this little crab that you can see it walking along the bottom, and then all of a sudden something happened to kill the crab. So this is really a fascinating little thing to see, because it probably killed them instantly. And then the crab was covered over by some more limey mud and preserved and became a fossil. So that's very unusual to see something like this. And the museum acquired it, I said, from this quarry in Germany. So that's another interesting about the horseshoe crabs. Now, I told you about the connection between horseshoe crabs and birds, because birds will wait till they lay their eggs and then they'll eat the eggs, especially in Delaware Bay, and some of the other bays also. Now, I mentioned, too, that the horseshoe crabs has 19 eyes. So where are these eyes? There are two in the front of the shell, two at the sides of the shell, and the rest of them are underneath the shell. So you say, well, there's not much to see in the dark underneath the shell, but these other eyes are light and dark sensors. They're not eyes like we have, but they're used for the crab to detect the day and night. And also in their tails, these telsons or spear-like tails, they also have sensors in their tails that can tell whether it's light and dark. So they're really fascinating creatures because they have nine eyes. And remember I said their original name was Cyclops, which meant one eye. Okay, so what else about these crabs is interesting? Well, they have the rare ability to regrow lost limbs in a manner similar to sea stars. You know, starfish and some other critters, I think newts can do it, you know, salamanders. But the horseshoe crab can regrow a limb. Now, that's pretty amazing. I mean, we can't do that. It would be terrific if we can do that. Maybe someday we can, with stem cell research, do something like that. But the horseshoe crab can do that, just like the sea stars. Sea stars used to be called starfish, but we call them sea stars now because they're not really fish, so we call them sea stars. And many years ago, the sea stars were a pest in the oyster beds because they would wrap their bodies around an oyster, and with their powerful tube feet, they would pull open the oyster and actually eviscuate their stomachs into the oyster and drink it down like an oyster on a half shell, and then that was the end of the oyster. But so the oystermen used to catch the sea stars, and when they would catch the oysters, and they wanted to kill them, so they would chop them up with a hatchet into pieces. Little did they know that the sea star could regenerate all of its parts. So that didn't help very much. Okay, the next thing I'm going to talk to is about the blood of the horseshoe crab. Now, you know, you've heard the expression, he's a blue blood, meaning he comes from royalty or upper class person. But the blood of the horseshoe crab, as well as the blood of most mollusks, which are snails, and cephalopods, which are squids and octopuses, contain a copper-containing protein, hemocyanin, at concentrations of about 50 grams per liter. Now, what do we have in our bodies, in our blood? We have hemoglobin, and the hemoglobin in our blood carries oxygen. So when our blood circulates and it goes through the lungs, it picks up oxygen to bring to the rest of the cells in the body, and it's the hemoglobin that does it in the red blood cells. So we all know that our blood is red. It's not blue, so it's not any other color. But horseshoe crab's blood is really blue because of this protein that they contain in the body. Okay, so let me tell you some more about the blood. It has this blood which is, the blood is colorless when there's no oxygen in it, and it turns dark blue when oxygenated. The blood in the circulation of these creatures, which generally live in cold environments with low oxygen levels, is gray, white to pale yellow, and it turns dark blue when exposed to oxygen in the air or in the seawater. Okay, now how do we know that? I mean, what these crabs have been used for a long time for bait for eels and conch, which is a shellfish. And so the baymen would chop them up and put them in the traps, and that's how they would use them for bait to catch these other critters. So scientists were doing a lot of research on horseshoe crabs because the nerves to their eyes are very easily found. So, in fact, somebody got a Nobel Prize because of doing work on eyes of the horseshoe crabs, because some of the eyes of the horseshoe crab have optic nerves that are just like ours. So the guy worked on the horseshoe crabs, and they got a Nobel Prize for that research. Okay, so we'll get back to the blood of the horseshoe crab in a minute, but before we do, I want to remind you that this is a great time to see them. As I said, the full moon tide, which is the highest tide of the month, and the new moon tide, which is also a high tide. Remember that the moon and the earth interact, and the moon causes the tides. So when the moon is lined up with the earth and the sun exactly, we get high tides. And this is the time to see the horseshoe crabs. So you can see Sex in the Bay from a prehistoric critter that's estimated, originated about 400 million years ago. Before the dinosaurs walked the earth, there were horseshoe crabs in the sea. So I'm going to stop right now, and I'll be back in a minute, and then I'll tell you about the more about the blood of the horseshoe crab. Hi, this is Bernie Wides, back again from a short break, and the program is The Naturalist, and our sponsor today was Fairway Markets, and I left you with a, not a cliffhanger, but wondering now, what good is this blood that he's talking about? What is he making a big deal about the blood? Well, I told you that it's a copper-based blood, so when it's exposed to oxygen, it's really, really blue, a beautiful blue color. So what do we do with the blood? Why, is it any good for us? Well, yes. Horseshoe crabs are captured and held in captivity, and blood is extracted from them, just as if you went to a blood bank to donate blood, and they would use this, they'd stick a needle in your arm, and the blood would run out into a bag, and you would be doing a good service if you had a relative who needed an operation or something, and you had the same kind of blood, that would be great, or just to give to the blood bank on general theory that the blood is always needed. So the scientists take the horseshoe crab and they extract blood from the horseshoe crab. That sounds pretty strange. So what good is the blood? Okay, so I'll tell you right now. The blood is used in medical testing. The blue blood that I mentioned before has a factor in it that causes it to clot when it's exposed to bacteria. Okay, you know, bacteria produce endotoxins, which make us sick and all that. So remember that all bacteria aren't bad for us. We have a lot in our stomach all the time and all that, but there are a lot of disease-causing bacteria. So the pharmaceutical industry, when they test new batches of drugs, they want to make sure that they're not contaminated with the germ-causing bacteria that will cause illnesses. So these bacteria are called gram-negative bacteria. Now, when I first did the research on it, I thought that meant that they didn't weigh very much, you know, because we weigh things in grams. But actually, the scientist who worked on this project was called Graham. And he developed this test to test for the presence of bacteria and gram-negative bacteria, which most of the disease-causing ones are gram-negative bacteria. So what happens is when the blood is exposed to ambicites or to test bacterial endotoxins, as I said, in pharmaceuticals, and test for several bacterial diseases. Okay, so here's what happens is when the blood is exposed to these bacteria, it immediately clots. You know, when we cut ourselves, the blood starts to clot when it's exposed to oxygen, and that's what keeps us from bleeding to death. We have a clotting factor in our blood. Well, the horseshoe crabs have the same thing, except that it's very sensitive to bacteria, and it will only clot if there's the presence of bacteria. So what they do is they extract the blood and they purify it, and they get out of the blood, it's called limnus ambocyte lysate, and the abbreviation is LAL, to test bacterial endotoxins and pharmaceuticals, and to test for several bacterial diseases. Also, enzymes from horseshoe crab blood are used by astronauts in the International Space Station to test surfaces for unwanted bacteria and fungus. So here we're taking blood from one of the most primitive creatures on Earth, 400 billion years old, we estimate the original horseshoe crab was, and we're using it on the space program. What they do is they take some of this LAL and they'll swab it onto a surface, and it will show up immediately if there are any bacteria on the surfaces. Okay, so also a protein from horseshoe crab blood is under investigation as a novel antibiotic, because how do the crabs protect themselves from infection? They have antibacterial stuff in their blood, like the lysate, and we're working on it to use in humans. Okay, so when they bleed the crabs, of course they don't take too much out, because it's a small animal, doesn't have a big blood supply. So some of the animals will die from the process. They figure only 1 to 2% will die from the process, and they may have been diseased or sick beforehand. And studies show that the blood volume returns to normal in about a week, although blood cell count can take 2 to 3 months to fully rebound. So here's a case where we're taking these critters and using them for our own good and then returning them to the sea. So here you go with recycling. It's a great idea. So if you see horseshoe crabs on the beach, please don't kill them. Kids like to flip them over on their back. Okay, but if you see horseshoe crabs flipped on their back, please just turn them over and let them crawl back into the sea, because sometimes they can't right themselves. And we don't want the population to decline. Okay, so I'm going to talk about conservation and management of these critters. So they're not presently endangered, but harvesting and habitat destruction have reduced its numbers in some locations and caused some concern for the animal's future. Since the 1970s, the horseshoe crab population has been decreasing in some areas due to several factors, including, as I said, they use the crabs as bait. That's one of the reasons also, and habitat destruction. You know, if the water is polluted badly or there's heavy metals in it, it's not good for these crabs either. So conservationists have also voiced concern about the declining population of the shorebirds, such as red knots, which rely heavily on the horseshoe crab's eggs for food during their springtime migration. So there's been a steep decline in the red knots. So conservationists are worried that if too many crabs are harvested, there won't be enough food for the red knots as they stop off on their way north. So they're considered a threatened species in some states, and some states they're not. Also, who eats horseshoe crabs? We don't eat them because there's not much to eat on them. I'd rather eat a blue crab, a soft shell blue crab, or a lobster, or a king crab from Alaska. So, but the Atlantic loggerhead turtles feed on these crabs, so they wouldn't be a big threat to it because their numbers are way down. So in some states, they have banned horseshoe crab trapping for use as fish as bait for conchs and eels, but in some states they put a quota on it because they thought the populations really were not tumbling. And they hope that they'll stabilize. So there's this balance that we try to strike between the resource. I mean, the birds need the eggs, okay? The horseshoe crabs have to be protected so the birds can get enough eggs. And also the loggerhead turtles eat the crabs. And since we don't eat them, we can certainly help protect them. So there's an organization that was formed. Of course, there's always an organization formed. It says This organization is called the ERDG. It's the Nonprofit Ecological Research and Development Group. It was founded with the aim of preserving the four remaining species of horseshoe crabs. So there's a species that lives in Japan, there's a species that lives off the coast of India, and our local species in the United States. So they are leading the fight to limit the amount of crabs that are caught and chopped up for bait, and to protect them in the state of Delaware, because that's a huge, huge area, as we said, for bird population. So it says every year approximately 10% of the crab breeding population dies when rough surf flips the creatures onto their backs, a position which they often cannot right themselves. In response, the ERDG launched a Just Flip 'Em campaign in the hopes that beachgoers will simply turn the crabs back over. Okay, also there was a large project to tag and count horseshoe crabs along the North American coast, which started in 2008. But they don't really have enough information regarding the population. So they really don't know if they're really declining seriously or just sort of declining. So remember now, if you're walking along the beach, take a look at these beautiful, well, some people don't think they're beautiful, ancient critters. And if you see them turned over on their backs, just flip them over. Even if you have to do it with by their tail, pick them up by the tail if you have to, and then turn them over, and you'll see them. They'll just slowly go back into the surf. Okay, so that's enough about horseshoe crabs. I just want to remind you that this is the time of year to see them. Sometimes if you go fishing, you catch them by mistake because they'll eat your bait. If you catch them while you're fishing, please don't smash them against the side of the boat to release them. Just take the hook out carefully, and remember they can't bite you. They don't sting. They're practically harmless. You could stick your finger in their mouth and nothing will happen because they don't have any teeth. So take care of our fellow creatures on Earth. And remember that you can join the Littoral Society and the New York Audubon Society this coming Sunday, May 30th at 10 o'clock. If you call up and make a reservation, contact Don Reapy at 718-318-9344. And if there's room, you'll be invited to go along. But you can do it on your own. Just go to places like Plum Beach or any place around Jamaica Bay or any of the other bays. So I'm going to sign off. And next week's show will be about the rocks that we eat. And you think about it. And if you can figure out what rocks they are, well, send us a message on the website. And I'll talk about a new exhibit at the Museum of Natural History coming up.